have a question or anything to say or share. And of course, you can come close if you want to. There's a whole cushion here. Yes, Michal?
Yes. Thank you. I was wondering if I would be able to read my quotation.
That's an easy question, yes, that I didn't have to answer. Yes.
There was what?
One thing on the board, saying that name we enjoy some relative peace.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, if the non-relative peace.
Okay. So, on the board there was a paper about silence early on. And it said something about maybe you enjoy moments of relative peace. And he's asking if there are moments of non-relative peace. They do talk about the freeing of the heart. And the possibility for a human being to do what needs to be done. They talk about like turning the jar over. Like some kind of complete turning into a human being. So let's find out. Any other? I think hands go over here. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. If I can speak about patterns of negativity that I've mentioned here and there, and he finds that it comes in waves in his mind. Is that what you said? Okay. Yes, definitely. I have my notes ready. Okay. Noah? There is no future. She's asking me to talk about the future. Yes, go ahead. Sorry.
I know, like, that's, I mean, we want to be here now, but still, like,
yeah.
Sometimes it comes up.
Sometimes it does come up, yes. I agree. Yeah. Sometimes every second it comes up. Also. Yeah. And every second it comes up now. So that's one. So again, this could be, we could think of even the thinking of the future. What's the energy that comes when there's, did you say planning or just thinking about planning? What's the energy with planning sometimes? Like it could be excitement, it could be fear, it could be resentment that I can't plan what I want to, or whatever. It could be any flavor of planning. Have you noticed any?
Chaos.
Okay. She said chaos. Okay. And, okay. So I'd like to include planning of any flavor, including chaos, as one pattern of mind that we're going to talk about. Yes. Michal. Veganism. Okay. Right. The connection between compassion, which she's saying Buddhist compassion, like for example, the practice, we practiced more loving kindness, and one companion to loving kindness is compassion practice. And within the love practice, literally, metta, mitra is, maitri is, friendliness and gentleness. So relating that to, the feeling that some people have not to, use any products from milk. Okay. I'll see if I can bring that in. No promise. Yes, Orly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. So, I'm sorry, go ahead. I think I missed something when I interrupted you. Okay. So in the past, you have practiced metta and enjoyed practicing metta in the more traditional way. Okay. So she's saying, in her experience now, which is a change, instead of practicing metta, which she has liked practicing, metta, maitri, friendship, friendliness, may I be happy, may you be happy, may we be happy, may there be happiness everywhere. Through words, reminding our system that we love love. Okay. And nowadays, she's feeling not to move from her experience of her feelings to the practice, the formal practice of friendliness. So that's lovely. That's where friendliness in action is staying with the feelings. Probably. Yeah. Yes.
I wanted to share something. I think was inspired by the poem 2 days ago. Seeing the fear.
So she wants to share something that inspired by the poem from 2 days ago about the things that fear us and seeing that. And
I had today an insight of being with a very strong sensation and emotion. And then came a phrase that was with me the whole day. And I think maybe it will benefit others that doesn't benefit me.
Wait, let me say that part. So, I think I already missed one part. So she had a very strong feeling today, and being with it came a phrase that she'd like to share.
The phrase was, to love myself.
Take your time. The phrase was, to love myself.
In the presence of this,
To love myself in the presence of this, which was the strong emotion in this case, is enough. Thank you. Beautiful. What else? Okay. So this talk is The Mess, Part 2. And it also has a second subtitle, which has been a little bit theme of the trip, which is Yala Balagan. Dovana. Which Balaki and Shoshana means let's make a mess, kind of, but like let's party. Let's have fun making a mess, something like that, if I understand well. So we talked about 2 days ago how things happen that we didn't plan. The unexpected happens, the surprise happens. We were having a nice, peaceful retreat, and then we freaked out, or we were freaking out, and then nothing was happening, and etc. And we talked about a messy way of practicing also, not needing to kind of kill the thinking or the patterns. So, and even in the presence of this, loving myself is enough. Thanks, Kamit. And we've talked about, though it can be helpful to be simplistic sometimes, like big mind, small mind, voices of the mind, voices of the heart, etc., also to realize where they come together, which is often, we could say, love. And so I'd like to talk about how it does come about that there are these self-torturing, intense patterns that can take over. So first, I remember reading in a book of Chogyam Trungpa, who's a Tibetan teacher, talking about when there's illness, and someone has the path then that includes illness, and how easily the approach to the illness, though we call it an approach trying to find help with a wish for help, what tends to happen is rather through trying to improve our help, we're actually trying to get away from the intensity of aliveness. And so, as with all other improvement projects, we can just check if it's true in our own experience. Is there a part of this project, whatever project, that is actually an avoidance of contact with aliveness in its intensity? Oh good, I get to read Wendell already. If I can find the right poem.
Yes. What?
No, I didn't. Twice you said the word and I missed the word.
Intensity?
Intensity.
Aliveness.
Oh, aliveness.
The intensity of aliveness. Yeah.
And one thing I like about these poems of Wendell Berry is that he's still alive in his 80s, and he has like 20 years of poems talking about how old he is. So 2001, number 6. The question before me, now that I am old, is not how to be dead, which I know from enough practice, but how to be alive, as these worn hills still tell, and some paintings of Paul Cézanne, and this mere singing wren, which is a bird, a regular kind of bird, who thinks he's alive forever, this instant, and may be. The question before me, now that I am old, is not how to be dead, which I know from enough practice, but how to be alive, as these worn hills still tell, and some paintings of Paul Cézanne, and this mere, that means like just only, such a small thing, this mere singing wren, who thinks he's alive forever, this instant, and may be. So So when we find ourselves occupied in self-torture, not that we necessarily want to be occupied with self-torture. Sometimes we do. Mostly we don't. But we are very often. We can notice that practice of how to be dead and feel for our love of aliveness, which many times is in the belly. Not for everyone. It's not that it is only in the belly, etc., but many times it's accessible as a kind of, I actually feel it like a vertical line in the belly that is electric, but it's not exciting electric. It's grounding electric. And so feeling for, in whatever way you feel, that you love life, though many parts of you may hate it and wish not to be here, etc., that we do love it. There's a love of aliveness. And it's not only love of trying to keep this body alive, though it can include tender care for this and tender care for other creatures. So touch on the vegan thing. But it does also and happily go and scarily go way beyond what we know of life already. In the Buddhist tradition, they talk about the ways that the different faculties and resources that happen. So, for example, we have a body and a mind, don't we? There seems to be, as far as we can tell. It could be some imagination, deep dream, but it seems like there's a body and a mind, right? And they go together. And the usual traditional name for this is nama rupa, name and form. So it's giving this kind of clue that mind, in this case, is all the words and things that go with words. Nama rupa, name and form. So that's present. And then something called consciousness also. That sort of is a kind of a certain kind of wakefulness, awakeness that lets body and mind and work, they work together to let our experience happen. So then there's contact of different kinds. Contact means contact including, and it all is contact, like the light has contact with our neurons and we see color. The sound waves have contact with, through this amazingly complicated thing in there. If you've ever seen how the ear, if you remember from sixth grade or whatever, like, it, amazing. All these. How does it actually get through there? So all the kinds of contact. Sense experience. The ways that we seem to bump up against. So all of that is kind of, all right, we kind of can agree that there's body, mind, consciousness, and contact. So far, so good. Okay. And then comes the uh-oh part, which is called the weak link in the chain. So we have this material to work with and the way that they can interact, body, mind, consciousness, contact. Light can come in and be perceived in a certain way or in another way, etc. Someone asked me today, what does etc. mean? Which I'm sorry if you've been all wondering what etc. since I say it approximately 25 times a day. Etc. means and so on. So far, there's no poison in the mind. There's no torturing of the mind. There's just body, mind, consciousness, contact. And there are, the idea is that everything influences everything else. And that can happen in a way that's, not fun. And that can happen in a way that has a lightness to it, that moves towards, it's not always fun in the usual sense of the word. It can be struggle and pain, but there is a kind of glorious fun in the opening to ourselves, to our freedom. And so how does it go? And we don't know why, but how does it go towards the not fun? So the next step is called Vedana, which has the same root as Vedas, if you've heard of the Vedas, the books of knowledge in India. So it has it's about knowing, but it's a very basic kind of knowing. So there's color coming and I take it in a certain way. It's a very basic filter of our experience that happens more quickly than we can say. So the color comes in and is filtered as outside, inside, friendly, unfriendly, or neutral, like ignore it. So this is this kind of moment where our system leaves the innocence of just body, mind, consciousness, contact, life going on, and takes a position. So instead of just the vastness, there's inside and outside. And since there's inside and outside, there's trouble. There's separation, isolation, danger, vulnerability, insecurity. So we need protection. We need to look out for danger. We need to have friends, allies, what's going to help, what might hurt. And anything at that point, now we start to go into survival mode. There's an inside, there's an outside, there's danger, and then this is survival mode. So then the perception is filtered as, it's not even technically quite perception yet, but the experience is filtered in a way that is all about survival. This is a good light. It's a friendly light. From my past experience, I can let it in and stay open. Or if I have the idea, and if it would be a fluorescent light, and I have the idea that fluorescent light is bad for the health, etc., then because of my thought, not the actual color, but my thought about the color, there would be the not liking, enemy, danger, close down, or attack. This is where, in a more experiential kind of experiment that we can make, when we notice the sense of not enough, and from not enough, all that happens. And we've talked about this a few times, but from the experience as not enough, which of course, if what is actually happening is really big, but then something happens to shut the experience down small, we feel separate, then of course not enough. Like there's some knowing that this is not all there is. This is not all I am, so to say. This is not all life is. And so, but that then we take as not enough, or it gets interpreted as not enough. So, yeah. As soon as there's a sense of inside and outside, then it's as if one way to talk about it is there's vastness. And it's too much. And something in us just goes, ugh, can't take it. And then we wake up and we're inside myself, and there's an outside. And as a separate self, then I'm vulnerable. I'm aware of my insecurity as a separate, which is partly an indication that maybe I'm not so separate. Maybe there's some sensing that actually there's bigger resources. There's a bigger flow of life. So this just happens to us, this filtering, this sense of separation with filtering. It happens to us. And one option is to let it happen and start to learn not to buy into it. To let that filtering happen, like the color of the cushion you like or you don't like, for whatever reasons, whatever past experiences. Someone told you that it's a good color for heart problems, so you feel, maybe that'll keep me from having a heart problem. And then you like it because of your idea. Or it could be something you have no idea why, but you like the color. But it's not that the color is likable. The color is color. Someone else doesn't like the color. Their past experience says it's a dangerous color. It's not that the color is unlikable. But our experience is as if the color is likable or unlikable. The color is good or bad. It is right or wrong. And this is again with the veganism, where we get wrong is when we think that we're right. And from that caring of, for the treatment of the cows that are giving the milk or the goats that are giving the milk and so on, from that care we go to right and wrong, and then we're mean. That's what usually happens when we put the ism on. When we love vegetables and we feel happy eating only plants, that's not an ism. Just one sec. So let's take an example of where there's a feeling of love for a cow. We feel the living quality in the cow, and there's the living quality in myself responds, and there's caring. So easily it can happen if we know that the cow is mistreated to get the milk, is treated in a way that feels hurtful to think of sister cow being treated. Then we so easily switch from loving and caring with the aliveness to the sense of lack of safety for the cow, or lack of care in our environment for the animal. So the sense of lack turns on. And then that's where usually we get power for a political movement, an ism. And it will be ineffective, because we'll be telling people what they should do. And we've forgotten that it was about caring and love of life. From the love of life, so many things happen, so many ways happen. But from the sense of lack, there starts to be more and more a sense of separation and more a sense of right and wrong, should and shouldn't. So then as soon as we see a glass of milk anywhere, we hate the person who's drinking it. How could they? The milk could be from a free grazing cow that lost, you know, for whatever reason, the milk is actually perfectly fine to drink. But we see the milk, if this is, our energy is getting charged in this anti-milk drinker ism, instead of veganism, loving the vegetables, loving the plants. We see a glass of white liquid, and what happens in us? I'm not vegan, though, also, by the way, but anyway. I have access to good milk, so. We can feel the emergency alarm system is on. And so from the feeling hurt, feeling disrespect for life, feeling fear that there's not a love of life, feeling fear that there isn't enough care, or whatever the fear is, We could easily drop back to caring. Easily. For a moment. But we can practice dropping back to the original wish of caring for living creatures. And so in the moment of seeing the milk, or seeing a white liquid, even better, we see something that looks like white liquid in a cup in somebody's hand. And there would be, for a vegan, easily the negative filter, like, that's wrong, that's bad. Easily it could happen. And so in that very moment, the chance to notice that negative triggering, we could see someone else taking the soy milk, and we have a positive triggering, but to notice that also, that's still the ism. That's still a painful pattern in the mind. It's still not reality. We're not in touch with reality. And even more interesting to think about is people are not touching either kind of milk, and we don't even notice them. Like, the way that our attention goes to what we take as destructive and friendly or supportive. And the chance to let that filtering go on and not take it as what I am, as a definition of what I am and a definition of what is. Even if that continues, we see a glass of what looks like milk, and we feel the body and the mind. We can just let it be. And nothing important. Just a ripple. Okay, let's first.
You mentioned before that there's a weak link in the chain, and I missed it.
It's vedana, it's this filtering. So in the chain of how things go, we'll see, so far it doesn't sound like much of a chain, but nama rupa, name and form, body, mind, that's one link. And then consciousness is another one. And those are kind of, okay, there they are. Ignorance is in there usually before. Ignoring means turning away. So we could talk about, could be the story. There is what is, and it's a huge mess. And we can't take it. So ignoring means turning away, not knowing. I ignore it. Okay, and then what can the body mind with consciousness and contact do but filter it, but go into survival mode? So the weak link, because it's where we get into the not enough mode, the emergency alarm system mode. And also it's weak because we can also open the chain there. It's where we get imprisoned by the mind patterns, and it's where we get free. Yes.
So in this sense that you talked about veganism, is there a difference between being vegan and being vegetarian?
So, yeah. I mean, according to the terminology that I know, vegetarian includes, strangely, because it isn't vegetables, dairy products and eggs, which is definitely not a vegetable. Whereas vegan is saying, actually, yeah, only plant products. No, of course not. Every ism. The possibility for the human being to meet the world and each other and ourselves, not from our past. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let love move you. Let love do it. Otherwise, it becomes some kind of perfectionism, which is, you know, we know what that does. Which is war. Eating plants is hurting creatures. Not eating plants, which means eating nothing, is hurting creatures. The mind wants it to be like one way or the other, or don't tell me about it. And that's not our situation. It's not one way or the other, and do tell us about it. Our situation here, not in the world. In this impossible, not black, not white, and still being here and living, and there's no how to do it right. So then it becomes clear that it's not through right and wrong that we can find a way to live in honoring our own dignity and love of aliveness. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Everything. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where the effort is coming from other places.
From force. Yeah. It is, yeah, impossible. So we experiment and we find out and it gets refined. We get more and more sensitive to what is actually, we start to feel aggression in what used to be. It didn't feel aggression before. And other times what would have looked aggressive, love is like firm and strong. The love of aliveness breaks out of the habit energy. So there are, in the Buddhist tradition, 7 factors of awakening. And one of them is vidya. So there's mindfulness, which is remembering. Literally, the word is not mindfulness. And so it's curious why we changed it to mindfulness. It's really smriti, sati, which is remembering, which is much better. If we know we're not talking about remembering the stories. Because it's remembering, like the pieces that seem separate come back together. And also remembering, here, I'm still here in this impossible situation with no way out, and so now what? And that's, then there's some flow, because life doesn't stop. And so one experiment happens, and then that, and so then that allows what's called dharma vichara, which is a sense of wonder, amazement, question mark, knowing that I don't know. So, impossible situation, and then it starts to come home. Not only do I not know how to live peacefully, because how becomes, we realize it's like this extra door that doesn't lead anywhere. It's just hanging out the side of the building. It's okay that I don't know. So not only am I faced with not knowing how, which is a kind of confrontation, it's not that I'm supposed to know. I start to realize that thinking that I should know and thinking that I do know is getting in the way. And that's that, where the falling apart of believing in right and wrong, in ideology, can happen. So then wonder and question mark, knowing that I don't know, realizing how great that I know I don't know. Now something else can move me. Call it what you will. And then what comes is vidya, which vidya is not just, can be called courage or energy, but it's the same root as the word in English, virile, which is, has a very much a masculine, meaning. And what that is in this context, vidya, is called, it's translated as courage often, or energy. It's that love of aliveness again. So it's coming out of the grip, the contraction of believing not enough. I'm not good enough. The world's not good enough. Something like that. And coming back to, yeah, maybe I'm not enough. Maybe the world's not enough. And I still find myself, like it or not, loving aliveness. Or in touch with aliveness if you don't like the word love. Or responding to the fact of aliveness. And that's like a switching back to. And then the next one that comes of the seven factors of awakening is ease or tranquility. So we can have this potency that it's like a and exactly we don't know how to do it, shift from the lack, not enough, to even if not enough, enough. Even if not enough, there's something good. However horrible, there's something good. And not only that, how do I know there's something good? Something in me loves that, responds to that, says yes. And so that's the dropping out of the grip, the it's probably some kind of shape in the mind, waves and electrical field is probably going on when we're stuck in hating ourselves, blaming ourselves, feeling ashamed, feeling whatever, angry, afraid. We can feel ourselves in that and not find a way out. That's what often is the case. We're in the shape. The mind is in the shape. Probably the mind field is shaped as fear. As there's some problem. And even if somewhere we know it's not true, or maybe it's not true, or it's not all, we're in it. And so part of the practice is all along the way feeling for maybe it's not true, feeling for what else is also going on. Even if I have every reason to be afraid, also the bird is singing. Also I feel my feet. Also there's out-breath, belly, the deep wish, and then, and when we contact from, we shift from, or the shift happens from not enough to okay, or not enough to not so okay but vulnerable, and we stay with vulnerable. And then vulnerable allows the pain that led us to believe in not enough to be healed. And it's so relaxing. So there's this potency and kind of electrical shift, insight, shifting out of war into peace, shifting out of what seemed to be true to find that it was completely made up, completely made up. So even if we still don't know what we are or what reality is, we're in touch with whatever it is. And then meditation can start. And of course, all along, there's different kinds of meditation where we're feeling what it's like to be in fear. Being in fear, we can feel the root of fear, some kind of not enough. Feeling the not enough, we can fall into vulnerable, softness, deep okay. Or being in fear, we can feel somewhere out there, I can feel that maybe vaguely there's a wind blowing. That's all practice. Let's call that practice. And then let's call meditation coming back home to vastness. So this is Jay Krishnamurti again. I just remembered the translation. I can not see in the back. Okay. Okay, thank you. Okay. So he talks about a mind that allows itself to dedicate to meditation. When that real dedication to meditation can happen, then it means something immense, he says. In meditation, mind discovers space. And then he says, normally when we think of space, space is held within a room and there is space outside it. So there's inside space and outside space. Thought, as the me, creates the narrow space in which it acts. It has created, through hurt, through all kinds of reasons, walls within which it lives. So this is just the introduction to what I wanted to say, but to kind of clarify. Sometimes we can feel what is meant by the word ego or separate self because we feel angry. But when we feel that like eating up of oneself, the shame, for example, it's easy to feel like that who I am is the one that's getting shamed. And that the part that's doing the shaming is somebody else. And that whole thing is ego. That whole thing is the separate, is the me. In that drama, the victim and the one who's hurting the victim. Thought as the me creates the narrow space in which it acts. It has created through hurt. So totally understandably from hurt, there's this closing down. And then we don't know how to, it feels like we don't know how to get out. And then it feels like we live there. There in that narrow space and the space which thought has created outside of itself, there is that narrow space and the space which thought has created outside of itself. Is there a space which has no frontiers, which has no boundaries, and therefore no center? This is meditation, to find out. So it's not to create now a new sense of an imagined space without walls, which would be within the walls of imagination. It's a discovery. And that happens by our energies being at peace with themselves. There's the remembering things coming back home, coming back together, coming into place. There's the courage to jump out of habit energy. We don't know how. And sometimes it feels pushy. And sometimes it feels easy, etc. So it's not that we can recognize necessarily so easily what right effort is. Sometimes it feels pushy. Sometimes we don't even know how it happened, etc. And there's ease. And then I forgot one, which is funny that I forgot. One of the seven factors of awakening is, well, joy, yeah, but it's rapture, piti. It actually comes really in the list. It usually comes after the vidya. After the shift, there's like, coming home and then peace. But it's not just, joy as we usually know it is another place where we can watch and recover our love of aliveness. When there is joy, whatever kind of joy, for any reason, relative or absolute, we have a tendency to throw it out. There's a sense that we should be expressing it. And there's less self-consciousness, so we're more willing, if we're shy, to be out with people, kind of thing. And we're throwing it away. And so this sort of reversing that direction, taking the joy in, into the bones. So to enjoy. And they talk in the text about how hard it is to take. That it makes the hair stand on end is this, the light version. The easy one is when the hairs just stand on end. And then there's all kinds of feeling of energy moving in the body. And ease, tranquility, peace, a kind of... understanding that of effortlessness. And that allows our energy to fall in to aliveness. And then the last factor of awakening is upekkha, which the best translation I know, I shared on the weekend, don't freak out. Don't freak out. In Pali, upekkha. Yeah. So, one of my teachers told that to me. I told on the weekend retreat also. Okay. So, when we can hang out with, ready to practice anytime, it's possible to shift from not enough into okay, okay anyway, okay even if not enough is true, etc. Then let the preferences be there. Let the Vedana filter in its own past-oriented way. But when we believe that we like red, so red is good, etc., everything comes in that way. When we just let it come in as really right, really good, really wrong, really bad, and really unimportant, according to our program, then the next thing that happens is called craving in English. It's really doesn't, this is a totally unhelpful word, I find, completely unhelpful. Literally is more around thirst, which can help us again feel that we are now fully in not enough mode. We're fully in emergency alarm system. And from experiencing as if not enough, I'm not good enough, or whatever is not enough, the next thing that will happen is a project of improvement. It's called becoming. And still there might be a chance of dropping out again. Might be. But what comes after becoming, we start to get all excited about how we're going to be better, and then we can be ourselves. We're going to stay up all night and meditate, or we're going to really speak nicely to our partner this time, not tell them all our insights about them, or our mother, or whoever, neighbor. And it's sad in this moment, because we really, with our really good intentions and really with our life energy, we really place that bet. We put our fortune in the wrong place. Like, I'm really going to try to be good this time and get it right so that then I have my life back. And we just feel for that back door where this is our life. And it, yes, it is a mess. And then it's fun. But when we do find ourselves going into the becoming, we're into the new program, the new ideology, the new ism. Then what comes next is birth. So then, like, we're committed to the cause, and people expect us to be there at the rally or whatever. Like, it has been a sort of life of its own that we have to kind of go through, however much we wish we didn't have to. So it could be like, for example, we decide I'm going to stay up all night meditating. And we're there around 11 o'clock and it's been really good and we're psyched because we're going to be enlightened. And then it's clearly time to go to bed. We feel. But we can't allow that because we're going to get enlightened. We made this deal. We're going to get enlightened if we sit all night. And now that we can lie down, you know, whatever. If only we would have gone to bed, we would have gotten enlightened. So, we can say it's fun to die before we die. Because we can not only talk about it lightly, we can really take it lightly. But we're talking about taking really important things. Things that we, because of our caring, have a lot of charge for us, taking it lightly. Means like, not mine. Maybe not so true. And then coming back to what is true. Aliveness and love of aliveness. Or a response to aliveness, whatever you want to call it. To really feel, and this is now a different kind of dying on purpose before we die, is a different kind of death from what Wendell Berry is talking about, where we practice death. We practiced it enough. We practiced emergency alarm system enough. And now that we're old, there's no way I'm going to find it again. Oh, thank you. Yes, thank you. This is what I call group mindfulness. Thank you. Group remembrance. Okay. So I love, each word sounds like so ordinary and it's just perfect. The question, the first two words, the question. The question before me, dharma vichara, like that one can be old and have a question before you. And we're all old, of course. We all know that any day could be the last day, so I prefer to count from the end backwards, and since we don't know, we have one day. So we're all old. To be old and to have a question before us, instead of be in the face of life or death, not going to survival mode. Not being living dead in survival mode, but being drawn into that, the living quality. So having a question before us helps. The question before me, so not like trying to fish a question and keep it up, but the question that arises to leave room for it. The question before me, now that I, not like generally someone might be old someday, but I am old. Is not how to be dead, which I know from enough practice, but how to be alive. And then his examples, as these worn hills still tell. Worn is just like if a piece of clothing, you wear it a lot, it gets worn. So it gets faded, it gets soft, it gets thin, it gets holes. It's not perfect in the idea of perfect. It's perfect in a living way. And they can tell about how to be alive. As these worn hills still tell. And some paintings of Paul Cézanne. Paul Cézanne said, the day will come when a revolution will begin from a carrot freshly seen. In his paintings, there's not bright colors, but there's the living quality comes across. That just that shift of perspective, seeing anything like a carrot that seems not revolutionary, but the shift of perspective, seeing the carrot, will start a revolution. So, especially now you asked about veganism, so you're in a revolution. Okay? And we want to go from the outside and force because it's so important. But it's more because it's so important. Keep staying with the shift of perspective back to caring. And from there can be communication. There can be understanding that someone else is really caring about the plants not being used with pesticide, not being sprayed with pesticides, and the water not being you know, they really care about that. And then, but then the retreat can't afford to buy this organic and that soy and that. It's like then the practical, like, where the heart's one true choice from the rule of love, and then the mind's daily labor of how does this fit here. So sometimes pushy can look, sometimes soft can look. There's not a, we can't tell from the outside. How to be alive. So the hills, the paintings tell about it. And this mere singing wren who thinks she's alive forever. This instant. And may be. And that's where the future can be at rest. The fullness and intensity of aliveness now, we start to find through experience, leads the way into, leads a good way into this now and this now. It's trustworthy. And an idea can come now about next week, and it has a certain quality, which is partly not fixed. It's not going to save me from my insecurity. But it's a good idea, and maybe we can move that way. But it might change. Or we might have translated a little bit wrong. Or it might be for somebody else. Or, and so feeling when there's like, planning, for where's the root of that? The pain. Letting the pain hurt. Which is our capacity in softness to let the pain hurt. But it's not only oriented towards the pain. It's oriented towards its own radiant softness, the aliveness in the softness. And then we feel our feet are in deep okayness. And we can be sensitive. That the sensitivity doesn't make it too much unbearable to be alive. The sensitivity has the feet in deep okayness. And the softness can let what hurts hurts, but it can let the delight be delightful. And the life is not oriented around those movements. It's oriented around the vastness of aliveness itself. Okayness. Okay. Deep okay. That's a phrase from John de Ruyter, a Canadian teacher. And we can play with even when the most terrible pattern is on for who knows what reason, or maybe we know the reason got triggered. But it's on and we hate it. It hurts, but we don't want to feel that it hurts. Maybe we can feel sometimes through the belly, the feet, or the fact that life is still going on, that there's also deep okayness. And the fact that there's deep okay and pain is not to negate the pain. It's not saying, no, it doesn't hurt. It's okay. It's not like, shut up. It's all okay. It's like, it's okay and it really hurts. And then we go, yeah, it's okay and it really hurts. It's not a problem that it hurts. It just hurts. Yeah. One more. When you see another. Okay, it's the same. It's not different. When I feel deep okayness and I notice someone else in pain, what comes across to me as someone else in pain, I'm not saying it's okay that you're in pain. I'm saying you're in pain and there's deep okay. And the deep okay allows me to actually meet you. Otherwise, I'm an emergency alarm system. And I feel threatened by your pain. And then I'm going to try to help you too much, too fast, or I'm going to actually not be able to look quite at you and be like, oh, you poor thing. And a person who's really in pain, we want that, yes, it's okay. Not like it's okay what happened to you or it's okay that you're in pain, but I'm here, there's contact. And that pain that's happening to you now is not all you are. I'm meeting all of you and the pain is there. I think it's enough. It's getting late. Yeah. 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 Everyone in this room has experienced something that is not okay. Not only one thing, but it's not saying that it's okay for people to be violent. But it is saying that even if someone is violent to me or to you, it doesn't touch my basic dignity. And being in touch, practice being in touch with basic dignity. It's, I know it's hard. The emergency alarm system wants to come on because it's so urgent. It's life or death. And that's why I'm calling it dying before we die, not in the Wendell Berry way, but like dying to all the isms and ideas and just trusting that in a human being, there can be access to love of aliveness. And that can move. That can respond to someone's pain, to my pain, your pain. It's not someone's pain. It's not, it's like here we are together with this. And now what? If anything. So when, in a real difficulty, like my son, I mentioned the long birth today. He was in the hospital for 8 days at the beginning of his life. So we were those parents in the emergency intensive care neonatal behind the glass. And it didn't help to see people's looks. It was fine because it was fine. But it was very interesting to see the looks. Now we're those parents in that movie. Which, of course, isn't any movie. It's life. So just feeling where the glass wall wants to come up. And how that's an escape from the intensity of aliveness. Okay, Amit, we'll go for it. What did you want to say? Okay. Okay, great. You sure?
Well, maybe if you want closure about it, it's like, it started to say about the die before you die and like aliveness and sort of, but you sort of
okay. May all beings live peace fully. May our practice and our lives be moved by, dedicated to the love of aliveness. So let's have 10 minutes for human being walking on the earth, standing on the earth, going to the bathroom, coming back, for whoever would like to participate in their last singing.